Hello and welcome to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Vancouver Canucks. I'm Brendan Batchelor, as always, joined by Randeep Janda. We call the games here on the radio, and we do this show every week as well. And great time to do a show this week, Randeep, because the Canucks are coming off arguably, maybe it's not even an argument, certainly their best home ice win of the season, but you could say that it's their biggest win of the year overall. A 4-0 shutout victory on home ice over the defending Stanley Cup champion Florida Panthers on Thursday night.
Yeah, you can quote me on this one. This is the best win of the Vancouver Canucks season. The Florida Panthers don't throw off-speed pitches. It's always the fastball from them. They come in with a forecheck relentlessly. They play a hard-nosed game, and Vancouver dictated the pace of that game. They brought the physicality. They were so good defensively, and especially in the neutral zone. That, to me, was Canucks hockey. We saw it many times last year, but this year, that was the first time we saw that type of game, and they looked real good.
So let's get into the factors that led them to perform very well. And I think we have to start with the personnel changes in the lineup. Most notably, JT Miller returning after a 10-game absence on personal leave. And it wasn't the most standout JT Miller game that I can think of. Like, you know, there were no hallmark moments in this game that I'm going to look back on when JT Miller's time as a Canuck is done and say, oh, don't you remember JT's big performance in that game? He played about 15 minutes, but I think he really stabilized things down the middle. It allowed guys to slot into roles that they're expected to play, that they can excel in. And just having his presence there, on top of the fact that he acquitted himself pretty well as well, I think that's what made a big difference, certainly with the forward group anyway.
Partly emotional of having one of your leaders back in the lineup. That's big for this team. But physically, he's a big dude. And when he plays down the middle, he can just clog up that area so well, whether it's in defensive zone, whether it's, you know, getting in the way for a team's forecheck. And that's what he was able to do, Batch. So I think, you know, picking up two assists, that's great. He's able to set up a power play goal, which happened later on in the game. Earlier on, it was the Brock Besser 2-0 goal, which starts in his own zone. Those points are nice, but I think that ability to patrol the middle of the ice, make things difficult for the opposition, and the draws. He beat Sasha Barkov 62% of the time in the faceoff circle. Remember, this is a Sasha Barkov that is 63% on the dot himself. One of the better faceoff men in the NHL. So for JT to come back in, have an impact on this game, he didn't take it over, but a positive impact across the board. That's exactly what you want.
So that was the major personnel change up front, with Miller coming back into the lineup and Atu Ratu came out as a healthy scratch. Let's also quickly talk about Max Sasson, who I think had his best game thus far in the NHL, and talked after the game about how he's been growing in confidence in terms of holding on to pucks and making plays. And we saw him do that twice in the first period to help stake the Canucks to an early lead.
Yeah, he was a confident player, I think, all night long, but that first period he was buzzing. And what I liked about his game, and Rick Tocchet mentioned it after the game, holding on to pucks, attacking, not rushing decisions. And that first goal that Carson Soucy scores, Max Sasson has a couple of decisions there. He can either go to the perimeter and take the puck outside, he can dump it in, or he does what he does. He takes his time, doesn't rush a play with the puck, and more than anything, angles himself for a pass to the trailer in the middle of the ice. That's the more, you know, higher risk play, because you hold onto the puck more, but that's also the more skilled play. That's the more confident play. And I love to see that with him. You know, in that first period, he showed confidence, skill, and speed. He's showing something here, Batch. We've seen a number of players make it up from the AHL. They have two or three good games and they start to fizzle a little bit. Maybe you see the confidence go, the adrenaline goes down. I think Sasson, maybe a couple of games ago, you could say, all right, where is this going? Does he still have that jump in his step? Well, the game against Florida showed that, okay, he's listening to what the coaching staff is saying, and there is some confidence there, picking up another two assists.
And he's a burner too, right? Yep. So he has that composure, he has that ability to make plays, but he's a speedy forward, he can get it on the forecheck, and in a fourth line role, that's something that Rick Tocchet, I think, really values, and it's part of the reason why Sasson has had a pretty good run of games here and a pretty good look. And couple that with the fact that you know, for a lot of his stretch in the NHL, he's been playing on what was essentially an AHL line, right? Like him and Ratu had been playing together a lot, and Danton Heinen had been playing down there too. But suddenly you get Teddy Bluger in the middle on your line, and, you know, Sasson had been playing some center as well. But you move him out to the wing, you bring a veteran like Bluger in on the middle of that line, and it kind of settles things down and allows you to play your game for a guy like Max Sasson. And I think we saw immediate benefit from having a veteran guy like Bluger down the middle on that line with the way Sasson was able to play against the Panthers.
And for Teddy Bluger as well, I think, you know, we've talked about in previous years, we talked about in the podcast last year, he's just such an underrated player for a couple of reasons. Defensively so good, but, you know, on that goal that, of course, Danton Heinen scored, who's providing the middle drive, just kind of pulling the defense apart a little bit? It's Teddy Bluger as well. So I love the fact that he plays a really underrated game, but he adds so much to any line he plays on, whether that's with, you know, Connor Garland, Dakota Joshua, or a younger player like Max Sasson.
There were personnel changes on the back end as well. Vinny Desharnais came out of the lineup to make way for a returning Derek Forbert, which allowed Mark Friedman to bump over to the right side after playing the left side as a right shot in the previous game alongside Desharnais. And I think the return of Forbert, coupled with a very strong performance by Friedman, gave the Canucks some defensive depth and some comfortability with their third pairing that we probably haven't seen them have, certainly since Philip Hronek went out of the lineup.
Yeah, there was a solid effort all around, but I want to focus on Derek Forbert. Like, I thought his game, remember, he hadn't played due to various issues, of course. The first one, a loss in the family, the death of his father, which is, you know, a mentally taxing thing that only that we can only imagine what he was going through. He comes back from that. He gets injured after one game. His last game was on November 2nd. And then Batch, he plays against Florida, and he plays nearly 19 minutes. So good defensively, squashing plays in the neutral zone, active stick, playing physical late in the game when guys like AJ Greer are running around trying to dictate and really up the intensity for Florida. Forbert drilled him along the left wall once, and that was it. He squashed that AJ Greer's intentions really quickly. But that goal that Danton Heinen scores, that play to me where Forbert has the puck on his stick in his own zone, attracts the attention, takes a little bit of extra time to make that pass to the middle of the ice to Teddy Bluger, and eventually that leads to a goal. That was just a composed play by a veteran defenseman, and that I look at that game and saying, hey, you haven't played in over a month, and you're able to play that consistently. That's a veteran player that knows what he can do and knows what he needs to do. I was really impressed by his play.
And then we have to talk about Kevin Lankinen as well, who picked up his third shutout of the year. And, you know, he kind of downplayed the importance of that game afterwards. But I think for Lankinen to come into the crease for the first time since Thatcher Demko returned, and there's been all the conversation around that and around Demko's health and around what it means for the crease going forward. And we're going to get into some of those topics coming up in the mailbag here in a few minutes. But for Lankinen personally to have that strong of a performance against the defending champs when he knows that Demko's back now, when he knows that, you know, there's going to be at the very least a battle in the crease and he has to show as well as he possibly can to try and, you know, continue to get starts going forward once Demko gets ramped up, for him to have that kind of performance, even though he didn't want to really get into that after the game, I think it probably has to mean a lot to him.
Yeah, it's a, hey, I'm still here. I know the number one guy and the Vezina contender has been declared healthy, played a game, but I'm still going to do what I do, and that is really good for this team in the short term because Thatcher Demko is not going to be ready to go as a number one immediately. I would say in the short or medium term, but it keeps keeps the Canucks goaltending standards very, very high, and it's internal competition, which is what you want at every position, including goaltender. So while Demko's figuring out his recovery, his level of play, all of those things, you don't have to worry about having a potential starter or not, or a number one goaltender or not. Kevin Lankinen is probably, in my opinion, Batch, I would say, the best value contract in the NHL right now. Like it might be Patrick Alvin's best signing going back a couple of years based on the fact that this guy's making less than $900,000 a year. It's pretty wild.
Well, and if you look at the record that the Canucks have been able to put together here without Demko in the early season, with all the other injuries and absences that they've had, they wouldn't have been able to do that without Kevin Lankinen. And so even if Kevin Lankinen were to not play another game the rest of the year, I think he's already been a greater value than you would have expected for what they paid for him and when they brought him in, just because he's been a big part of this team keeping their heads above water during a really stressful period with a lot of adversity that they've faced here. And that, as a Canucks fan, has to excite you that now they're pretty well healthy. Filip Hronek is the only player remaining out of the lineup. And what happens once they get back to almost full health, save for that one guy, they have their best performance of the season. The question now, and this is where we can look ahead to the Saturday game against the Bruins, is, okay, you've had that game, you've put it on tape, you've showed that you can play at that level, now you got to do it again, and you got to do it again after that, and you've got to get on a roll, and you've got to show that you can play that way consistently if you want to put yourself back in the conversation that you were in coming into the season as a legitimate Stanley Cup contender in the Western Conference.
Batch, that style of play was the Canucks' identity last year, the one we saw against Florida in the last game. It's not their identity yet this season. They have to string together those victories. They have to string together that style of play. And once they get there, then we know this team is for real, that they're back into it. But it doesn't get easy. They've got Boston. They've got Colorado. Those are two teams. One is very hungry in Boston. They've started to, you know, their play is getting a little bit better here and there. Colorado is always dangerous with their star power. So can you play a similar style that you did against the reigning cup champions against those two teams? If we're talking about three straight wins or three straight strong efforts, similar to the Florida game, then we're talking. Then we're in a situation where we can really start asking the question of, okay, are the Vancouver Canucks back to what they were last year?
And speaking of questions, we're going to hear from you coming up next. We'll take an early break again because we've got lots of questions we want to get to in the mailbag after the break. You're listening to In the Booth on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Canucks. Brendan Batchelor and Randeep Janda with you. I always remind you at this point of the program, if you missed any part of the show, it lives as a podcast on the Canucks Central podcast feed. Make sure to subscribe to that. You get the daily show with Sat and Reach every weekday. You get every Canucks postgame show with Sat and Bick. And you get In the Booth with me and Randeep as well. And we got a bunch of questions in from the listeners here, Randeep, so let's go to the mailbag. We've got one in from Bolo Punch on Blue Sky, who says, if Hoglander starts playing better before the trade deadline, would you still trade him? Canucks win on Saturday, Man U wins on Sunday. That's a great weekend for you, Batch. Yeah, it would be, with the Manchester Derby coming up on Sunday. But this is a Hoglander trade question. We've kind of delved into these conversations a little bit in the past on this show. Obviously, he was elevated onto the line with the returning JT Miller and Brock Besser for the win over the Panthers. And based on how that game went, it wouldn't surprise me if those lines stay the same. So, he's got a trend in the right direction. I don't really know how to answer this question, though, because for me, the question around whether you trade Nils Höglander or not is less about Nils Höglander and more about his asset value and what you might be able to get in return for him and if that's going to help you more than having him in your lineup on a night-to-night basis.
Yeah, quite simply, it's what are you getting back or what's your end goal in batch? Really what it comes down to is, and we've discussed this at length on various episodes of the podcast, it's defense. You know, what kind of, if there's a defenseman coming back the other way, a top 4D on this team, I think Nils Höglander, even if he improves his play, we know a defenseman will be a high impact piece. And especially if we're talking about a, you know, number four, number three defenseman on this team, to fit into that second pair. So I look at this and say, everybody's got a price. Even if he improves his play, That might be something that the Canucks approach based on the player opposite him in that deal or in a separate deal. So I think with Hoglander, improving his play regardless has to be a key for this team. They want to improve his play. They want to make it more consistent. And his first really re-entry into the top six with JT Miller and Brock Besser, I thought it was, you know, okay. I think he had some moments where he was aggressive on the forecheck, but you got to bring that effort. You got to bring that consistency. And of course, that trust in his game consistently where the coaching staff and the management can believe in him, but still some way to go there.
Yeah, and the point made about if he starts playing better, would you still trade him? Well, his value might go up and the quality of piece you might be able to get back in return could be better if his game improves before the deadline. So that's such a fluid question for me. And again, it's less about Hoglander, who I think if he plays well and can find some consistency, has some offensive upside, we know what he can give you in this lineup. But at the same time, you look at the back end, you look at some of the other needs on the team, and he is a luxury item at a position of strength in terms of short-term analysis of this team and what they want to accomplish this year. Next question in from Strong Belly on Blue Sky. What is a reasonable walk-away number for a Lankinen extension? And we've started talking about the Lankinen extension a little bit over the past couple of weeks here with the return of Thatcher Demko. I'm going to stick by what I've said all along with this, is this kind of depends on where Demko's health goes and what his long-term future looks like. If he gets a good run in the crease here, gets back to being a Vezina-caliber goaltender, you're looking at signing him to a long extension, you're comfortable with his long-term health, then the walk-away number for Lankinen, for me, gets lower and lower the better that Demko plays and the more confidence you have in his ability to stay healthy. Conversely, if there are any issues with Demko, whether it's finding his game, whether it's with health, whatever it might be, then suddenly I'm thinking more and more about re-signing Kevin Lankinen, and the walk-away number gets higher and higher, where I'm more willing to overpay to have a little bit more consistency in the crease. So I don't really know where that specific number fits in, and I feel bad because the first two questions out of the gate here on the mailbag, I'm not giving straight answers, Randeep, but it's a much more fluid situation than just being able to say, oh, I'd sign him for $4 million, but not for $5
million. Well, Batch, in the long term, looking at this team and the goaltending situation, a lot of it is going to depend on Thatcher Demko, right? This is a player that's under contract for another year beyond this year. And if he is that elite goaltender that we've seen as recently as last year prior to his injury, you have to consider extending him, because how many players can play at that level in the NHL at that position? Of course, it comes with its own risks when a player is heading into his age 31 season, which he would be in the 26-27 season. But at the same time, you know, that's a risk assessment not only Vancouver has to do as a team, but also Thatcher Demko. He's a UFA. He can call his shot. So I think first and foremost, this discussion has to be centered around Thatcher Demko. Is he healthy? Are you confident in him being an elite goaltender heading well into his 30s? If he doesn't play well, yeah, that's Kevin Lankinen's music that you hear, right? That's a player that at the end of this season, I think you have to make that assessment. What that number is, I'll be honest with you, I don't have that. Is that double what he's making right now? At least, right? If this guy's a bona fide starter for some team in the NHL, all it takes is one team to say, hey, you can be our 1A. We're looking at probably something that's triple his number, if not quadruple his number, based on some of the teams that are currently looking for starting goaltenders. But he is a goaltender with 133 games under his belt. There is still something that he needs to show the rest of the way. Batch, the career high in games for him in a season is 37. Before you commit dollars on a long-term deal to a goaltender, you want to see him get above, what, 45 games. So I think the wait-and-see approach on Kevin Lankinen and Thatcher Demko is required. As much as a sitting-on-the-fence type of answer it is, you've got one goaltender that needs to show you something health-wise. You've got another goaltender that needs to show you something sample size-wise.
Yeah, and Kevin Lankinen now up to 21 games this year with the Vancouver Canucks. His career high was in his rookie season back in 2020-2021 when he played 37 games. So, you know, the body of work so far has been great. We're not going to criticize that, but you need a larger sample size. You're absolutely right before you're willing to commit term and dollars to him. But these are both really good questions for sure. And I think that Lankinen one is going to be something that is analyzed and debated quite a lot in this market going forward. Eric on Blue Sky writes in, with Demko back now, how is Tocchet going to balance the workload? Lankinen is playing really well coming off the shutout against the defending champs. Do you expect it to be a 50-50 split between both guys? And in the short term, I think the answer is yes, just based on wanting to get both of these guys in the crease, wanting to get them both some games before the holiday break. The Canucks have 6 games before they get their 4 days off over the holidays. And other than a back-to-back this coming week, Wednesday, Thursday, in Utah and Vegas on the road, they've got a day between every other game. So we know the two guys are going to split those 2 games pretty confidently, but it wouldn't surprise me if we see Rick Tocchet flip-flop back and forth between the two of them from game to game, just because the schedule is structured right now where you can do that, where both guys get a little bit of rest, both guys get a few games, and you can try to warm Demko up here a little bit without running him out for 3 or 4 games in a row, let's say.
Yeah, I think in the short term, if anything, you might even have a 2-to-1 start ratio for Kevin Lankinen as you're trying to figure out, okay, what, you know, is that recovery for, what is that recovery like for Thatcher Demko? Do you need to see him in every other game? Do you need to, can you sit back in these 6 games you mentioned? You know, if it's a 4-2 split, I don't mind that, just based on there's so much that we don't know about Thatcher Demko and the way his body will react to getting back and playing hockey. He's played 1 game, but we also need to look at, you know, beyond that, right? So I look at, you know, Kevin Lankinen, he's shown that he can play games, and you don't want him playing 6 straight games like he did earlier this year, but you can ride the hot hand a little bit, at least in the Boston game. I'd love to see Kevin Lankinen starting where he just had a shutout, give him that start again. On Monday, maybe Colorado, you give Thatcher Demko that one, and the Wednesday game against Utah and Vegas, like, you're not in a situation where a traditional backup, you'd say, oh, you can't play them against the Golden Knights. This is Thatcher Demko. He can play anybody. So I think those 2 games, you generally shelter a goaltender, or you try to go with your starter in game 1 to get that, you know, the fresher team. I don't think you have to do that. I think you can be confident in either one of the back-to-backs. So for me, the ratio, maybe in the next 2 weeks, maybe in the next 3 weeks, if it's a 2-to-1, I don't mind that. I think that's still protecting Thatcher Demko, and you can ramp up as you go. But in the long-term batch, yeah, it's ride the hot hand. Whichever goaltender, once Thatcher Demko is up to speed, he's ready to go, he's consistently starting games, I would love to see a 1A, 1B situation for this team.
Yeah, and, you know, you're right to point out that we don't know the questions about his recovery and how they need to manage that. So, you know, there's a possibility it needs to be a 2-to-1 ratio, as you point out, while he works through some things. There's a possibility that he's feeling pretty good and wants to play more, and they want to get him in there. So I could see, you know, I could see it being 1-for-1, like I alluded to. I could see it being a 2-1 split in favor of Lankinen in the short term as well. I don't think they're going to give Demko the net for a stretch quite yet and let him run with it, just to make sure that he ramps up, and also because of the fact that, you know, Lankinen's played well, so you don't want either of these guys sitting on the bench for too long. But that's something that we'll look forward to and analyze as we get into the next handful of games for this Canucks team. One more question, and this applies to the goaltending too, from Ray John on Blue Sky. Can you guys recap the situation with Ian Clark? Do you think it affects Demko's performance? So I know there have been plenty of things reported or rumored out there. The only thing we can really say definitively is that Ian Clark is no longer the full-time goaltending coach for the Vancouver Canucks. He now is a consultant for them, you know, helping with scouting and looking at the future of their crease. But Marco Terenius is now the goalie coach for the Vancouver Canucks. So, you know, we'd have to actually talk to Thatcher Demko and get his honest opinion about his thoughts on having a new goalie coach. But the fact is, since the start of this year, with all the rehab stuff he's been doing, he's been working with Marco Terenius. Marco Terenius is now the goalie coach, and that's the guy he's working with. And he's ramped up. He's come back in. He had a solid first performance. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and definitively say Ian Clark no longer being the goalie coach has no impact on Demko going forward, because we just don't know the answer to that. And, you know, Demko's not going to necessarily come out publicly and give us all his opinions on that situation. But I think all we can look at is how Demko performed the other night, and he performed pretty well for a guy that hadn't played in more than 230 days.
Yeah, one of the things we do know is, and you mentioned it, right? Like, this is an organization that still employs Ian Clark. He's still working in a capacity for the organization, even though it may not be in Vancouver. It might be done a little bit more remotely in a scouting and consulting role. The other thing is, and, you know, this was referenced at the time of the announcement, where Ian Clark, for some health reasons, and there is going to be, he wanted to take a step back for that reason as well. You know, this is a guy that's worked on the ice for a very long time. Will we get more to the, you know, the information behind that and the story? I know there's a lot of speculation in this city. There always is when it comes to scouting directors or goaltending coaches. Maybe when Ian Clark is no longer with the organization, he'll talk to media. Maybe he won't. We don't know. But as of right now, I think it's quite clear that Marco Terenius on the day-to-day is most involved. Justin Pogge at the AHL level is helping these prospects hopefully get to the NHL level one day. They're working in unison. They're working together on this. Batch, you and I saw that during training camp. Pogge was heavily involved with the younger goaltenders in the organization. So with the Ian Clark stuff, like, there's the announcement and there's what you understand of the situation. And that's kind of the reality of the situation right now.
So thanks for the question on that. We've got more questions that came in on Twitter. Our good buddy JD writes in, and this is a pressing question coming off a night where he scored in his 500th career game. JD asks, do you think the Canucks will re-sign Besser, or is it a decision where they cannot afford to re-sign him? And, you know, we saw some reports this week. There's some noise beginning to percolate around the pending free agent Brock Besser. And I think the number that was thrown out there by Nick Kiprios was north of $8 million on an 8-year deal is what he's looking for. You know, this is going to be all about the long term for this organization, but I think the short term is something that is going to become a part of this conversation too, because yes, you want to sign Besser for the long term. If you can make it work in the cap, obviously he's a great player, plays well with JT Miller. Those are important things for this current group and the way it's constructed. But you do at some point have to look at your salary cap situation and look at who you've given money to already and who you still have to give money to. You know, there's a Demko extension potentially in the offing, and you have to prioritize who's going to stay and who's going to go. And also, as I mentioned, that's sort of the long-term look at things. The short-term look at things is, you know, if you're not going to extend Besser, then there is a very good chance you let him walk at the end of this year unless you do something before the trade deadline. Now, I'm not advocating, let me make this clear, in bold letters, all caps, exclamation points after it. I'm not advocating trading Brock Besser. But what I'm saying is it is one of the potential eventualities of this situation based on how the organization values him, how they value him in terms of how important he is to this group of players, how they value him in terms of term and dollar amount. And if how he values himself doesn't line up with how the organization values him, then I do wonder if there's a possibility that we see some sort of trade by the deadline. I think Patrick Alvin even alluded before the season to wanting to have a decision made on Besser prior to the deadline. And so that's going to be another fascinating story to follow as we get into the new year, because, you know, this is a team that's wanting to compete right now, Randeep, but at the same time, this is where short-term and long-term kind of collide, and you have to decide what's best for your group both this year and going forward.
For sure you do. And this is a complicated conversation because if you look at Brock Besser as a 40 goal scorer, yeah, he's very, very much in that above $8 million range if he can keep that up consistently. But here's the thing, he's done it once. And, you know, I think the NHL sees him more as probably a 30 goal scorer. But even in that range, when you start looking at players that might be a little younger than him, like a Jordan Kyrou, who's 26 years of age, 37 goal scorer, he's hit 30 a couple of times. That's a player that has a cap hit, an annual cap hit of over $8.1 million. And this is an individual that has shown that he can score at a pretty decent level, hit 70 points a couple of times. So do you see Brock Besser as a 65-point scorer or a 75-point scorer? Do you see him as a 40-goal scorer or a 30-goal scorer? A lot of this is going to be some of the precedents previously, and I'll give Kyrou this as well. He's also played center in his career, but other players as well. Lucas Raymond just signed a new deal. He's above $8 million. So where do you see Brock Besser, and how do you see him aging as well? He's never been the fleetest of foot players, so maybe the skating doesn't drop off that much as he goes later into his career, but you know he is a stronger two-way player. So I think that that number that Nick Kypreos put out there of apparently the Besser camp looking for something above 8x8 on an annual average of 8 at least is something that makes sense to me. But a lot of this also does, you know, speaks to valuation of the player, comparatively speaking, to a couple of other contracts. You mentioned it, Thatcher Demko. Quinn Hughes' contract, the next one, is not that far away either. You have to start planning for that. The cap is going to go up, but there's a limit to how much money you can spend.
Yeah, exactly. There is. And also the term here, like I'm sure Besser wants an 8-year deal, but that's going to carry him through until he's 36. It would, because he's going to turn 28 in the new year, and that would be a new deal kicking in next season. So how comfortable are you if you're the Canucks committing that kind of money, but also committing that kind of term to a guy into his mid-30s, who, as you alluded to, has a lot of upsides, but what's he going to look like as a player when he's 34, 35? We know the foot speed hasn't always been the greatest, but he's a very smart player. He's able to overcome some of those issues with his skating, and he's also vastly improved his skating at the same time. But you know, these are all really interesting questions, and ultimately, I don't know where things are going to go because I don't analyze the cap as deeply as the organization will, where they'll be projecting, you know, where they've got room next year and the year after that and the year after that and who fits in and how do the puzzle pieces work. All I'm saying is that I don't, because I don't know of how they're analyzing that, and because I don't analyze it in that way, in that level of detail that the organization does, I don't know how this is going to play out. And, you know, I could see it going either way, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, with the Brock Besser conversation, I think one thing is we have to acknowledge he's a much better player than he started off with this organization. He's added layers to his game, which is going to add value to that contract for whoever signs it. The other thing is, this is a guy that's been very loyal to the city of Vancouver. I remember doing an interview with him after he signed his second deal, so after his ELC, and he said, you know, this is a place that he'd like to stay his entire career. That was his second contract, Batch. A young man at that point saying it. So he's always loved the city. Now, can you find that happy medium where the team is happy with that deal and what he's able to bring, and is Brock Besser happy with the deal? That's going to be the marriage, so to speak, moving forward. But one thing is for sure, Patrick Alvin wanted to see a little bit more from this player this year, a little bit more sample size. And with him, of course, that head injury did not help. It slowed him down a little bit from taking that hit from Tanner Jeannot. But this is still a player that's got 19 points in 21 games. So that overall game is still trending in the right direction. And now with JT Miller back in the lineup, you'd expect it to ramp up even more. So could be another big year for Brock Besser if he continues to play this way.
So we'll keep an eye on that situation going forward. It's going to be a fascinating one. And we should note again, Besser reiterated last night after the game when he was asked about playing his 500th game as a Canuck that, you know, he's really proud to have played all 500 games in Vancouver and loves the city. So he is already setting the groundwork for wanting to stay here, wanting to be a part of things. And you would imagine that in a perfect world, the organization would like that too. It's going to come down to the dollars and the cents at the end of the day. Next question, Justin in East Van, who writes in and asks, should Mark Friedman stay on the bottom D pair, or should Erik Brännström slot back into the lineup? And, you know, I think in the short term, Friedman's going to stay in. He's played well for a couple of games. Rick Tocchet has talked about liking lefties on the left side and righties on the right side. But it doesn't mean that Erik Brännström won't get another chance ran deep, and it also doesn't mean that Erik Brännström shouldn't get another chance.
No, it's a healthy competition on the back end, and Mark Friedman, credit to him, he played a very strong game against the Florida Panthers. He was physical, he was at his agitating best, and he played a strong game. He was able to move the puck up the ice when needed. He was there for support defensively. With Brännström, I think styles make fights, and for that style of game, Mark Friedman played very well. Now, this healthy competition within the team and that back end specifically now requires Brännström to be that much better. So we'll see moving forward. I think Mark Friedman has earned at least another game or two here with that effort against the Florida Panthers. But Batch, this team is going to require puck movers, and that is still Brännström's best asset.
Although I will say, it didn't feel like they missed him against the Panthers, did it? Like, they were able to move the puck effectively. Friedman brought a bit of a physical edge that you don't necessarily expect from Brännström. So, you know, I agree. In the long term, Brännström's a puck mover. You need puck movers. But if that group is able to play the way they played against the Panthers consistently, then maybe that need isn't quite as pressing as we thought. The big question is going to be, how many times can they replicate a game like they played on Thursday?
A lot of this is also the reality that Mark Friedman in his career has been a tweener. He's, you know, played some really solid games, but at some point that lack of consistency shows up, and Brännström is very much the same. So you're right, he played a good game against Florida, and Brännström had fallen flat the last few games, but if they can push each other to be better, this might be good for both of them. Until they show us that they're full-time NHLers, you'd expect they're going to get a run of maybe 5, 6, 7 games, and then at some point you need a bit of a jolt. So potentially they can work against, you know, compete against each other, but work with each other to drive the best out of each other in this situation.
And our next question is about another defenseman that's kind of in this conversation, although he's been in trade talks this week, or trade rumors at the very least. Mike writes in and asks, will the Canucks have to attach an asset to trade Desharnais? And yeah, there have been some reports, including Elliot Friedman in the 32 Thoughts column, saying that the Canucks are exploring trading Vinny Desharnais. And that's not necessarily surprising. It hasn't really worked out thus far in Vancouver for Desharnais. There's a cap hit there that if they could move off of it, it gives them some more flexibility. My hope is that they wouldn't have to attach an asset, because he's a big physical right shot defenseman, and there aren't many of those on the market. But at the same time, you know, teams kind of know what Vinny Desharnais is. They've seen his performance in Edmonton. They've seen how he sort of struggled to fit in Vancouver. So it wouldn't surprise me if the Canucks would have to attach something, whether it be salary retention, which I don't think they would want, or an asset to try and move Desharnais out. The question is, are they going to be willing to do that, or would they rather keep the player, continue to work with him, maybe even, you know, put him through waivers and send him down to Abbotsford, as opposed to giving up more assets on players that you're just trying to get rid of and get off your books?
Well, a part of that is also having a player on the right-hand side that you can put in the lineup right now if you do want to send Desharnais down, or explore other options, maybe outside the city and flipping him out of town in a trade. But I look at Mark Friedman elevating his game here in the short term. That's good. Derek Forbort coming back into the lineup, killing penalties, allows him to play that role. You don't necessarily need Desharnais in the lineup, whether that's sending him down to Abbotsford or exploring a trade. In terms of attaching an asset, okay, if you're looking at the best, one of the better deals that the Canucks management team made was, it was getting Travis Hamonic to Ottawa for a third round pick. And that's a rare deal. That you just don't simply see deals like that very often in the NHL without attaching an asset. I don't know if you're going to be able to get a deal like this with Desharnais, but you might have to attach a small, you know, a minor asset to a deal like that. But Batch, there are teams that look at this player potentially as an individual that you could add to your lineup. He allows you to get to the floor potentially. He's got some term. He's an NHL defenseman. Are there some non-competing teams that would at least look at Vincent Desharnais? And if you have to attach a minor asset, I could see that play out. Or the other thing is he a part of a bigger deal, right? If we're talking about other players involved from the Canucks or players coming back in a deal, can he be a player for a team that is non-competing right now to say, at least you've got a player under contract this year and next year potentially, you know, if you're a team that's trying to hit the floor?
And an important thing to bring up in this conversation, and it jumps into my mind because it was something we talked about when they made that Hamonic trade, is all it takes is one GM, right? You don't need a big market for Vinny Desharnais. You just need one GM out there who wants to take a flyer on the guy, and that's all it takes to get a deal done. So we'll see how that progresses here in the coming days and weeks. Our next question is from Princess Erica, who wrote this question in last week, but she wrote it in after we had recorded, so we didn't have time to fit it in. So we'll talk about it now. She says, with the way Hugh Suter has been playing, do you think he is likely to make Team Switzerland for the 2026 Olympics? Who could you see him on a line with? And are there any other Canucks you think will make their home country's team for the 2026 Olympics? So my short answer here, Randeep, is absolutely Hugh Suter is going to be playing for Team Switzerland. I think even if he wasn't having a strong year, he'd be a good candidate to be on that team anyway, because they don't have the depth of some other nations. But especially with him filling the net, you know, he'll be on Team Switzerland, assuming that Team Switzerland's in the Olympics. I'm not up to date on what the qualification looks like and who's going to be in that tournament, but Hugh Suter represents his team nationally for Switzerland, and I would expect him to do that going forward.
Yeah, I think with Hugh Suter, for sure, and hey, Switzerland's depth is getting better, right? You've got players like Timo Meier and Nico Hischier. Go through the list. They've got some high-end talent, but Suter still makes probably the middle of that lineup. Of course, Roman Josi as well on the back end. The other player I'm looking at is a player that represents Latvia, Teddy Bluger. This is another individual, depending on whether the Latvia is in the Olympics, whether they still get that top designation at the top of the tournament. This is a guy that, when you start looking at Latvian players across the NHL, there's a few of them, but Teddy Bluger would probably be a top six forward on that team as well.
Filip Hronek for the Czechs as well. He would be on that team, yep. You would imagine. All the guys that have been named to Four Nations face-off teams already, you'd certainly expect to be in the mix at least to represent their countries at the Olympics a year later. And then a couple of the guys that have been left off, like Brock Besser and Thatcher Demko, if they have good years and good seasons next year too, then they could put themselves in those conversations. So it'd be interesting to see, once we get to the 2026 Olympics, how many Canucks are suiting up for their countries. But
I'm going to give you one more name, though, okay, just in case. We're going to go into the minors here. Danila Klimovich with Belarus, right? Mm-hmm. Another option as well. If they are, and listen, it hasn't been a path to international hockey for Russia or Belarus, but if Belarus is allowed back in international competitions at that point, that could also be a name.
Yeah, absolutely. It could be. So we'll see, you know, first of all, whether Belarus or Russia are even represented at the Olympics because of everything that's happening with the war in Ukraine. But, you know, that's essentially a couple years away here still, or a year and a bit away. So lots of things can happen both internationally with hockey and in the world prior to that Olympic tournament. Our next question is from Ray, who writes in and says, since it looks like Demko and Lankinen are a great tandem, do you think Alvin should buy them bubble wrap for Christmas? Yeah, that would be a smart gift for the general manager to give them to make sure both those guys stay healthy so the Canucks can have that strong tandem into the second half and hopefully into the postseason as well.
Oh, yeah, that should be the stocking stuffer for both of the guys. And it's a great situation to have. I was listening to the post-game show after the Florida game, and there's conversation about goalie controversy. Do you consider, you know, flipping one of these players? And I was just yelling at my radio saying, no, let's remember what happened last year when Thatcher Demko got hurt. You had to reach, you know, to your third-string goaltender. Having two goaltenders of this quality, you run with it. It's a very good luxury to have, and hopefully they both stay healthy.
Couple questions left here. The next one comes in from @Calgary_Anand, who writes in and says, Randeep and Batch, thanks for the opportunity. I'm a Flames fan future to be broadcaster in Calgary, finishing my third semester at SATE. So just one more semester left. That's exciting. Then you get to jump into the industry, hopefully. The question, your best highlight or memorable experience of your broadcasting career, if you can answer that. Thanks. So we've talked a little bit about some of these things, about like most memorable calls or memorable games. One of my biggest memories, first of all, is just my first chance to step into an NHL booth and call an NHL game and realizing that it's me on the microphone. And that's, you know, my first regular season game was against Connor McDavid and the Oilers, and Daniel and Henrik Sedin are playing in that game. And you realize that you're calling the best players in the world do what they do. So that's something that always jumped out or jumps out to me when I think of memorable highlights or moments, because that was sort of like a welcome to the NHL moment where you're in the booth and it's really happening for you.
Yeah, along those same lines for me, I wasn't necessarily broadcasting, but I remember the first time I stepped into an NHL arena with my media credential. And, you know, Batch, we've been in this game for a few years now, but that first time you enter the arena and you go up to the press box and, you know, you're sitting next to people that you may have listened to on the radio or you read their work, that was a special moment where I can't believe my name is next to these folks. I'm sitting in press box. I remember sitting next to Pat Quinn once, and for a kid that grew up in 1994, watching his teams go to the Stanley Cup final, and to me, you know, for me to be sitting next to him in the press box when he's in his later days scouting for the Edmonton Oilers, that was special. And I remember that first game as well, the sliding doors opening to the locker room, and the first person I saw was Roberto Luongo. That was one of the, wow, I can't believe I'm here moments. So it was not necessarily on air. It was, I can't believe I'm doing this. I can't believe this is the start of my journey, a sport that I've loved my entire life, and I'm here. And you know, after a few years, you kind of get used to it, but that initial I can't believe moment still sticks with me.
Yeah, absolutely, for me as well. And our final question, Randeep, is maybe my favorite question that has ever been sent in the history of In the Booth. It comes from East Van Jay, and the question comes along with a photo on Twitter of David Pratt, formerly of Team 1040, TSN 1040, TSN here locally. The question, how good is that? And my answer, very good, kids. Take it to the bank.
I love it. Adios, muchachos. That used to be I love the sign-off he had when he was hosting those shows too. Okay. Behind the scenes, this is what we do in the booth. You and Eddie Gregory, when we're in commercial break before the game starts, our producer on the broadcast, you guys say how good is that on the broadcast. I can't do it the same way, but this question, I love it because Dave Pratt, Vancouver radio media legend.
Yeah, and Eddie and I both go back to, 1040, and we both worked there, and we both worked with Dave. So there's a lot of running jokes from those days that I think we still get into a little bit off the air behind the scenes when we call the games. But, yeah, Dave, anytime you bring up Dave Pratt and how good is that, I love to see it. So very good. And since our show is done, I think that's an appropriate way for us to sign off here in a moment, Randeep. Before we do that, I'm going to have the call on the radio of the Canucks and the Bruins on Saturday, but you're going to be on Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi. What's coming up on your show?
We got Toronto, Detroit, and in game two, Vancouver, Boston, but also this weekend on the show, I've got an interview with none other than Canucks legend Roberto Luongo. So keep an eye on that. That will be on the broadcast, and you can keep an eye on my socials as well. So Vancouver Canucks royalty on Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi this weekend.
Yeah, we'll absolutely be looking for that. And I'll be calling the game here on Sportsnet 650 with Landon Ferraro. 7 o'clock puck drop Saturday night, pregame at 6. Thanks again for listening to In the Booth right here on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Adios, muchachos.